From the Lynn to Grand Hill University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of May, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at agmarket.net. Gary Schnittke will join us again with some wrap-up thoughts related to the two-week trip that he and his colleagues from the FarmDoc team made across Brazil. By the way, there will be a webinar on Thursday of this week. You can sign up for that. It's free online right now at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. That'll take place at 11 a.m. Thursday. And today, right here on this program, we'll also hear from the statisticians in Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa about crop progress in their regions.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at 581 and a quarter. It was down 11 and a quarter cents. September 11 and a half, lower at 506 and a half. And December corn at 505 and a quarter, down 9 3/4. July beans, 1364, 36 and three quarters lower. November at 1207, down 24 and a quarter. The bean meal, $4 lower. The bean oil down $2.24. And soft red winter wheat down 13 and a quarter at $6.47 and a half. The hard red July down 3 cents. Wayne Nelson at agmarket.net now joins us on this. Oh, Wayne, it's a turnaround Tuesday. You probably need to get tired of doing this. It was a rough Tuesday today.
It was a real rough day. We've generally enjoyed over the years, with Turnaround Tuesday has generally been a rally day. So we've had a lot of fun following up after Kurt on Tuesday when we can have a rally. But lately, he hasn't been treating me very kind and give me he gets the rally on Monday and I get the real sell-off. But, you know, it looked, the good weather, the planting progress, the lackluster demand, the outside markets, there's headwinds in all the grain markets. The Dow is down a couple hundred points. The dollar is staying strong. But a lot of it had to do with the economic news out there, the retail sales and this worry about the debt ceiling. And China especially, they did not have good economic news. They're the biggest buyer in the crude oil market as of lately. And a lot of their economic news didn't look that good. And that sort of put a little fear into that. We won't see them coming back into the market near as strong as we'd hoped.
You mentioned the debt ceiling. Yesterday was the first day where I really started to see the stories start to pile up about the debt ceiling. It's imminent, somewhere between June 1 and, I don't know, July 15 or something like that. However, in Washington, D.C., they haven't seemed to be able to come to any conclusion on this one. And I think it's beginning to spook the marketplace a little bit.
That is, like I said, I think this was more the economic conditions of the U.S. and the world as we go along and look at things. You know, we've got Russia. It's been in a big war for quite a while here. We've got the European Union not exactly sitting totally strong. And then we see China's economic data. And, of course, ours with this debt ceiling and maybe defaulting here in the near future. And it does look like we're going to look at some recessionary type feelings by a lot of the people out there. So I think that this is the overall feeling, is a little bit of fear that's got into the grain market, along with just the lackluster demand, the very good weather in many places, the rain that's falling in some places so we need it. We had the high hopes yesterday that the wheat market was going to help bring us on back, but It even sort of took it on the air today too, Todd. So, we did see a couple of the advisory firms that did re-hedge some stuff that they'd bought back last week in the corn market here today. So, there was technically, we did break back through some points.
Yeah, so a couple of notes about that. November soybeans and December corn actually held at some important areas, not technically exactly, but they didn't break through $5 to the downside or $12 to the downside. I suppose that gives you some hope at this point.
It is. Those are big things, Todd. When you break through those even numbers, it generally always goes another 10 or 15 cents. And if we could hold those and maybe bounce out of these tonight, not saying that we're definitely looking for a bounce, but you got a lot better chance to bounce when you didn't go through those and close 4 or 5 cents above them today that way, and could maybe hold them overnight. And if we see a little brighter news, and overnight or in the morning, then that can help us maybe have this point be a stopping point rather than a point that we give into to the marketplace.
On the flip side of this coin, and this put pressure on the market too, both the corn and the soybean planting has proceeded very quickly, and the crop has been getting a drink just a little bit everywhere, it appears. I was hearing and looking at the topsoil and subsoil moisture levels across the Corn Belt. Not so bad. I guess the crop should be in good condition.
They basically really are, and, you know, making good progress. You know, we've been held up, you know, yesterday afternoon and today a little bit because some rain out there, not heavy, you know, a little bit, maybe by 5 o'clock we can actually even work some ground over here. But crops are coming in, not very big so far up here, but, I mean, they have got really good stands. It popped through that corn that was under the surface for those two real cold weeks where they started going. It's come up now, and it's looking awfully good. It's good stands out here. So along with some decent weather, along with some moisture, you know, we could be caught up pretty faster than you think here.
Hey, thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson at agmarket.net. Always remember, it's price times bushels. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of Sunday, 65% of the corn crop around the nation had been planted. The rolling five-year average is 59%. 30% of that crop is emerged. 25% is the five-year average. 49% of the soybeans are in the ground. 36% the five-year average. And 20% of that crop is up. The five-year average there is just 11%. Winter wheat headed at 49%, the five-year average 48%. The condition of the crop, 25% good and 4% excellent. That's the same as the previous week. Topsoil moisture conditions across the nation now stand at 63% adequate and 13% excellent. That's 6% better than the previous week and 4% better than this same week last year. Now, here are the updates from the statisticians in Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois.
This is Brian Gallagher, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office. Warmth helped crop emergence this week. However, the wet conditions marginally slowed planting progress. Farmers were still planting corn, soybeans, and oats during the dry periods of the week. Other reports of interest were concerns for isolated flooding and for a swath of large hail across the central portion of the state. Topsoil moisture condition rated 3% very short, 14% short, 76% adequate, and 7% surplus. 86% of Iowa's expected corn crop has been planted, 8 days ahead of last year and 1 week ahead of the five-year average. 35% of the corn crop has emerged, 6 days ahead of last year and 2 days ahead of the average. One-fifth of Iowa's expected soybean crop was planted during the week ending May 14, 2023, for a total of 69% planted, just over a week ahead of both last year and the average. 19% of soybeans have emerged, 9 days ahead of last year and 5 days ahead of normal. Hay condition improved to 72% good to excellent. Pasture condition jumped to 53% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Brian Gallagher.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician. Temperatures finally warmed up last week, and the state of Illinois averaged 67.8 degrees. That is 6.4 degrees above normal for this time of year. Rainfall was also above normal at an average of 1.5 inches across the prairie state. That was 1/2 inch above normal. There were 3.5 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture was rated 1% very short, 7 short, 59 adequate, and 33% surplus. Corn planting advanced by 11 points and reached 84% finished by Sunday. That is 35 points ahead of last year and 21 points ahead of the five-year average. 45% of corn acres have emerged, and that is 11 points ahead of the five-year average. Soybean planting reached 77% finished compared to 34% 1 year ago and 45% normally. 38% of soybean acres have emerged compared to 18% normally. Switching now to winter wheat, 74% of wheat acres are now heading in Illinois. That compares to 52% 1 year ago and 56% normally. The condition of the wheat crop declined from 1 week ago. It was rated 8% very poor to poor, 30% fair, and 62% good to excellent. Hay harvest has just begun for alfalfa hay and for other hay. Last item, pasture conditions improved and were rated 4% very poor to poor, 19% fair, and 77% good to excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS, Minnesota Field Office. Parts of the state received large amounts of precipitation, but overall, Minnesota farmers had 4.0 days suitable for field work during the week. Field work included planting and some pre-emergent spraying. Pastures and hay were reported to be greening up and no livestock issues were reported. Topsoil moisture supply is rated 2% very short, 5% short, 66% adequate, and 27% surplus. Corn planting reached 61% complete. That's 8 days ahead of last year and 1 day ahead of the 5-year average. Corn emergence reached 15%. Soybeans planting was 30% complete. That's 8 days ahead of last year, but 3 days behind the 5-year average. Soybean emergence reached 4%. Planting progress for barley reached 23%, with 4% of the crop emerged. Oats planted was at 53%, with 28% emerged, and spring wheat planting reached 28%, with 3% emerged. All hay condition was rated 55% good to excellent, and pasture condition was rated 52% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Midwest. Let's return to our conversations about Brazil that have been happening over the last couple of weeks. Gary Schnitke and company, the Farm Dog team that had been traveling, are now back in the United States. Welcome back, by the way, Gary. Thank you for joining us and all the time that you were in Brazil. We appreciate that.
No, it was a good time, and thanks for doing these broadcasts, Todd.
Well, tell me about this last day. It was all about econ, I take it, in Brazil for you?
Yeah, so Friday was our last day there. We were there in the morning, and then we began flying home in the afternoon. But in the morning, we met with the IMEA, which is essentially the Mato Grosso Institute of Agronomics. That group was formed by a consortium of the what's equivalent to the soybean growers, cotton growers, and corn growers in the United States. It was formed by that organization. So this is essentially focused on Mato Grosso and agriculture in those areas.
What did you learn from them?
Well, we talked quite a bit about with them. They are actually, if you're looking at what they do, they have the equivalent of a FarmDoc site down in Mato Grosso. So we talked about sharing data amongst ourselves on cost of production and things of that nature. We also spent quite a bit of time talking about land use in Mato Grosso. And just to give you a feel, right now, and remember, Mato Grosso is the size of Texas times a half. So 1.5 times Texas is the land area in Mato Grosso. 13% of that acre is in cropland, and 25% of that Mato Grosso state is in pasture. So 13 to 25, and they're projecting that 25% pasture, a significant amount of that will convert to cropland. So the movement of more pasture to cropland, or the growth in soybeans, corn, cotton in Mato Grosso isn't over. And if you look at it in the next 10 years, they're roughly predicting the size of Illinois soybean crop to be added as more acres in Mato Grosso alone. And that doesn't include also the other areas of Brazil that will be expanding, including the north and northeast and the Matapiba area. So growth in Brazil isn't over, particularly if we continue to have good prices, and that will serve to keep a lid on our prices here.
Is there a single takeaway big picture that you got from the whole of the trip as it relates to production in the United States?
So, well, there are several of them. One is that the expansion in Brazil isn't over. As I looked at Mato Grosso in particular, you know, I do think that that we look at them and you know, Illinois farmers can compete on a cost basis with Mato Grosso farmers. They're still going to expand because they got a bunch of acres to expand. In fact, I think that Illinois farmers might actually be more cost efficient than Mato Grosso farmers, because their great advantage over what we have in Illinois is they pay little for farmland. So think about not having cash rent on Illinois farmland, and you get a picture for what their returns look like. So, and by the way, that's going to end for them, because as that land comes into production and less of it comes into production, their land prices are going to increase, and they're going to be doing like us, paying more for land. A number of farmers there said, you know, it impresses us that what Midwest farmers or U.S. farmers do is make good returns from the land and give it all to the farmland owner, which is pretty much true and is pretty much what does happen. And again, that's going to increasingly happen in Mato Grosso as things become more developed. And so that the difference in land cost was one of the things that I took away from it.
When you look at the FBFM records in context of this, what does it tell you about land ownership and the efficiency of an Illinois farm? Meaning, is there a space, a place in that where a percent land ownership makes more sense than not?
Yeah, Brazilian farmers own most of their land, although they're renting a significant portion of it. I would put it at, you know, just in looking at the percentages that the farmers we went to talked about, was about 50-50. So they're renting their land too. I mean, you know, you can't change your rental percentage. You can't buy farmland too quickly just simply because it costs too much. You know, looking at FBFM versus Mato Grosso, we here have higher seed cost. They have higher fertilizer and pesticide cost. And on the operating side, it probably just about evens out. On the machinery side, I'm not sure they're more efficient. And on the labor side, they have, if you look at employees per unit of production, they have more than the United States. Well, they have big farms. They have a lot of employees on those farms. So, and again, you know, the individuals there had the advantage of coming into a new area, which was really difficult, you know, really difficult because there was no infrastructure there. And we talked to the winners. There were a lot of people that got taken out over the time, but they went in and built an area and had both a boom in commodity prices, or really good commodity prices over time, and very low land prices. And you can't hardly duplicate that.
For the Illinois landowner, Illinois farmer, Illinois production, maybe Midwest production as a whole, is there something that needs to be invested in to keep us, keep the Midwest competitive? What is that?
We're going to be competitive, and we continue to have to be cost efficient, and probably continue to look at ways of making us more productive, more yield per acre, particularly if we can do that in a temperate climate. One of the things that you keep looking at now, though, is what's going to happen to land prices, at least in the short run, right? And that we're going to see continued expansion in Brazil. And you saw the WASDE report last week. You know, we're going to see downward pressure on commodity prices. Interest rates aren't, I don't, everybody's hoping that inflation comes down, but who knows? But lower commodity prices and higher interest rates leads to downward pressure on asset prices, including land. So we'll see where that all leads. But yeah, you can expect at least a stagnant farmland prices and maybe declines. Again, you didn't need to go to Brazil to know that was going to happen. Though that's a pretty predictable sort of thing. So
how important is infrastructure investment in the United States still?
It is very important. And if you look at, as one individual ethanol plant told us, you know, the cheapest place to buy corn is in Mato Grosso. The reason why it's the least expensive place is because they have roughly the same cost to grow corn there than here. And in fact, they may be a bit bigger from an operating cost standpoint, but you can't move it out. So you get it into ethanol plant, and we have to keep that advantage here in the United States. Recent investments in the Mississippi River is a good thing for our competitiveness. We simply have to realize that there's nothing we're going to do about it. Brazil's there, and they're going to be there forever, and they're going to be the dominant producer of soybeans and could become the dominant largest producer of corn in the near future. And adjust to that reality, that doesn't mean that agriculture here is going to wither, but we now have to look at Brazil as a major producer.
Roads, bridges, railways,
yep,
and river system infrastructure, all important.
Yeah, and the one thing that several Brazilians told us is what the United States did that was good was they invested in infrastructure and education. And education for people is critical as well. And we've heard that a number of times. Infrastructure and education. And it was amazing to see that the second generation, how many of them had gone off to college. They all could speak English, and all that we talked to were obviously very intelligent and very good managers.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist, a member of the Farm Doc team, traveled to Brazil in the last 2 weeks. Coming up on Thursday, this Thursday, the 18th day of the month at 11 a.m., Gary, the Farm Doc team, myself, will be hosting a webinar. You can sign up for that now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu to recap what they saw over those 2 weeks. farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It's free. You can also find it online at willag.org to get yourself registered today. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.